You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Kenyon's Run. Stage 15. Today we are in El Acebo.
Well, welcome to the 15th stage of the Vuelta a España. I'm at the summit of the final climb, the Santuario del Acebo. 154 kilometres stage today, started in Tineo, and it's up and down all day in the Asturias Mountains. It's really stunning again, very remote. There aren't very many towns and villages here, which was problematic if you wanted to stop for lunch, as I did. But anyway, we're here. It's a great crowd up here as well. And it's a really spectacular scene. It's the highest mountain, it looks like, for quite a long distance. Not that high, but it certainly feels it. It looks like being a breakaway day today. A big group, over 5 minutes clear of the bunch just as they approach this final climb. A couple of them have clipped off the front, Vasil Kirienka from Team Ineos and Sergio Simitier, but the rest of the break not too far behind. Mark Soler is there, Theo Gegenhardt, Lawson Craddock, Ben O'Connor, Sepp Kuss of Jumbo-Visma. And behind, it's Sepp Kuss's teammates at Jumbo-Visma who are really controlling things extremely well for Primoz Roglic in the red jersey. But it's a tough climb up here, so we are expecting a bit of action. And I'll describe that as it happens later on. This is one of these As Live podcasts, which unfolds as the stage unfolds. I'm going to be joined by Daniel Freib a bit later on to discuss what happened today. And before that, we're going to hear from a couple of special guests, I suppose I should call them, although familiar voices on the cycling podcast. So, as I say, they're just approaching the final climb now, and it looks like being a day for the breakaway. A few more good climbers there. Johnny Zagheri is there as well. Jose Herrada. So a few riders that we've seen quite a lot of at this Vuelta. And yeah, one of those guys should win up here. Well, it's yet another of these super steep climbs, really steep at the bottom. Matt Stevens, our colleague at Eurosport, actually rode up the whole climb on his folding bike, invited me to join him. I politely declined that invitation. It's tough and it's long, and it's yet another new climb. It's not the first time the Vuelta has been up here, but first time it's been up this side. And I know that because I spoke to Vuelta director Javier Guillen this morning. He started the Vuelta in 2009. This is his 11th race as the man in charge. That interview will be tomorrow's Kilometre Zero. Among other things, reflect on 10 years of the red jersey. And we're going to hear, in fact, from Bradley Wiggins in that episode about what he thinks about the red jersey and where it stands alongside the pink jersey of the Giro and the yellow jersey of the Tour. So, they're onto the slopes now, and it looks like Simitier's dropped Kirienka. Pretty sure Kirienka was a bit of a foil there for Theo Gegenhardt. But Simitier, another of the Euskadi riders who, as a team, have been performing extremely well in this race. Really, really strong performance from them. They've been up there in all these kind of hilly stages, as a lot of the Spanish Pro Conti teams have done really well, actually, here. Lead down to 4:43 over the bunch. Jumbo-Visma controlling things. There's George Bennett on the front with Robert Hesink behind, and Roglic tucked in behind Hesink. And I spoke to Robert Hesink yesterday morning, and he said that really his job was to shepherd Roglic as much as possible, partly because he's so big, he's a tall rider and offers that bit more shelter. The others, Nielsen Paulus, George Bennett, Sepp Kuss, obviously all very strong on the hills, but much smaller guys. So Hesink, very experienced and that bit bigger. You can see him, he's just got Roglic sitting on his wheel pretty much the whole stage.
The fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Kenyon's Run.
Thank you very much indeed to our title sponsor, Rafa. And it was my proud job this morning to present Pedaleur de Charme, the Rafa t-shirt with our Pedaleur de Charme design on it, to the week two winner, Pierre Latour, as voted by you, the listeners. He seemed delighted. With some riders from some countries who are perhaps not French speaking, we have a bit of a job explaining exactly what Pedaleur de Charme means. No such issues with Pierre Latour, of course. So he was delighted and posed for a photograph with the t-shirt. But yes, thank you very much indeed to Rafa. Still watching the climb here, and before we proceed, I want to just say a quick good luck to a good friend of mine, Paul Cook, who along with some friends is riding or setting out tomorrow to ride from Land's End to John O'Groats. Now, 2 years ago, Paul was diagnosed with mesothelioma, which is basically asbestos cancer. Survival rate is a year usually. Paul was given 6 to 18 months. But he had surgery and got on his bike. He wasn't a cyclist before, but he's trained really, really hard. I've been out riding with him a lot. He's got himself really strong and fit. And although he's suffering with a bit of a cold, I think, at the moment, so he's not in the best of health, but he is setting out tomorrow to ride from Land's End to John O'Groats. And I wish him and his team the very best of luck. They are raising money for Erase Meso, which is erasemeso.org. That's erasemeso.org, and they're on social media as well at erasemeso on Twitter. But I'll be following Paul's progress with great interest, and he's a real inspiration. Very, very positive attitude, and he's cancer free and looking forward with hope, I think, and optimism, and certainly taking on this challenge of Land's End John O'Groats with great enthusiasm. So good luck to him and his team. At the front of the race, meanwhile, I turned away there for a moment, and it looks as if it's Sepp Kuss off the front. He's obviously been given his freedom today. We've seen in this race how strong he is. He could have a good chance here, but it's very early on the climb. There's still a long way to go. So let's see what happens as the slope carries on up towards us here at the summit. Here we are on the Puerto del Acebo.
Santuario.
That as well.
Virgin. No,
it feels, that's Virgin. I'm with Orla Chinoui. Hello, Orla.
Hello, Richard.
And Adam Blythe.
Hello.
Friend of the podcast.
I am. Thank you for having me back.
Pleasure, Adam. Now, you're the Eurosport team. This feels like the roof of the world, doesn't it? We're only at 1,200 metres. I know you've been discussing how it works up here in terms of oxygen and weight of air and gravity and all kinds of other things. I mean, I walked in on a fascinating conversation earlier.
Yeah, interesting one. I don't think we can air that. The actual conversation we're having, it's a bit... not for listeners' ears at this time.
That's the After Dark podcast.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, a lot of conversations going on, really. But it's just passing the time, isn't it, Orla?
Yeah, it is. The answer is women don't ever do that. So just to clear it all up.
Oh, my goodness.
Use your inals.
Anyway, here we are. Well, first of all, Adam, I mean, how are you enjoying being part of the media here instead of racing?
It's actually quite weird. It's nice not racing, so you don't have the pain. It's weird watching it because you kind of want to be in it until they go uphill. And then I'm like, oh my God, thank God I'm not going up that hill. But yeah, it's a weird one. I'm enjoying it in the sense this is something new and I'm enjoying doing it. But I do miss riding my bike. If it was 5 years ago, not really now because it's so fast these days.
I was going to ask you actually, we did a Climb to Zero with Adam Hansen last year at the tour. He was there working for the media. And here's a guy who's ridden more Grand Tours than I've had hot dinners. And he learned a lot being on the other side of the fence. Has that been the case for you? Has anything surprised you in particular?
It's not really surprising. I've been to a few now, but I think the main thing is it's just all the circus with it. Everything that goes on around it, that's the main part of it. And I think with the media is there's a lot of organisation behind closed doors that you don't really see. You just think that these guys, you know, just get put up in a hotel, drive to the race. But you have to do quite a lot of work yourself, which is, it's kind of refreshing actually, because when you're a bike rider, you literally just wake up, go to breakfast, get in a bus, go on your bike, repeat every day. And this, you get to think about what you're doing a little bit and go for dinner and not worry about having a massage after and having a drink, really.
And sing karaoke of an evening.
And sing karaoke.
I assumed you got massages in the Eurosport team. Orla, we call any segment that you're on the Irish Corner, of course.
Come on, be a bit more creative.
I was meaning to come and speak to you anyway, but then Sam Bennett went on. Yeah. For we Irish, that was a fantastic occasion, wasn't it?
Oh, I love how you just claim anything. You're like a little nationality magpie.
Chameleon.
Magpie. It was brilliant yesterday, though, especially because Sam Bennett didn't even know that he'd won it, you know, and he had to ask afterwards whether the breakaway
was caught. He knows
now, yeah? He does know now. But it was a brilliant win. We've been saying this on air, haven't we, how we see Sam Bennett winning a bunch of sprints. And yesterday was just completely different because that ramp, I think, was a lot, you know, it was a lot harder than it would have looked on the stage profile. They seemed to know what was coming. But he was totally confident, totally self-assured. And for Bennett, who'd been saying, you know, he had a few niggles in the first week, he was sick after that. It just shows the form that he's got. And we weren't quite sure how he would get over the mountains. But yeah, I mean, it tops off what's been a fantastic season for him, which is remarkable given the roller coaster he's been on. But yeah, 13 wins now this year. It's brilliant.
Adam, you're a sprinter. Well, you know about sprints. You know how they work. I mean, Sam Bennett's interesting. He's 28 now. It's taken him quite a long time to get to this point. And it's looked in the past as if there was something missing. He was lacking confidence a lot of the time. What do you see in him that's different this year?
He's faster.
Really? Is it as simple as that?
No, it's a weird one. Because, you know, if you watch him, he's almost like... I feel like he's won a lot more Grand Tour stages, but he's only won two, but I think because he's winning a lot recently, it feels like a lot more. Hold on, five Grand Tour? Oh, yeah, two.
Giro as well.
Yeah, sorry about that. But I think the thing with him is he still isn't that confident, weirdly, because if you watch him, he's still just like the same kid he was 3 years ago, but he's just a lot better. So he's still like, oh my God, I've won again. This is weird, but amazing. So I think he's grown into himself a bit, but he's still shocking himself with how well he's going. And I still don't think he can quite get his head around how well he actually is going. He's not really... He is grabbing onto it because he's doing amazing, but I don't think he's really going, oh, I'm going this well, I am going to absolutely smash today. Because I'm sure if you showed him that little climb at the end of yesterday, he'd have been like, no chance, not a chance I can get over there. Whereas yesterday, he was just like, yeah, whatever, cool. I'll just sprint on my tops and win.
I wonder what he's like, though, amongst the team, because he comes across on the bike as being really confident. You know, that was a really confident win yesterday. There was no doubt for him that he was going to be able to do that. But he seems still quite shy and within himself off the bike and in front of the media. He's still quite like this little boy from, you know, the countryside in Ireland. But I think he's even growing into that now. I mean, we didn't, unfortunately, have time to get him on the show yesterday, but he was hanging around and really willing to come on and chat to us. And he seems to be enjoying that side of it now, I think, which comes with winning a lot anyway, I guess.
Yeah, he's enjoying the fame side of it, all the like nice things around fame, coming and talking to Brian Smith. One of them.
And Mitch Docker, you had Mitch Docker on yesterday sharing insights. He's a gift to the media, isn't he?
Soft spot for Mitch Docker.
I do have a soft spot for Mitch Docker. I thought he was so sweet. He was lovely. And just one of these, I mean, it's just a dream on this side of the fence when you get people along who are just really relaxed and really themselves in front of the camera, because that's quite rare. It's unusual. And he was just brilliant. He came on with his like little fisherman's hat, and he was just the dude, the absolute dude. I loved it.
We were just chatting before I started recording there that I went to speak to Willie Smith this morning, the Katusha Alpecin rider, who seemed to... Well, Luka Mezkic obviously had to pull out the race, but Willie Smith came off second worst in that crash yesterday, and his knee looked horrible. He posted a picture of it on Twitter today, and it looked pretty grim. He started, he's determined to finish. It's his first Grand Tour. I went to speak to him at the start this morning. Here's what he said.
We've all seen on social media this morning the state of your knee. How does it feel?
You know, yesterday after the crash just under the Flamme Rouge, I saw a lot of riders obviously got hurt really badly, and I knew waiting around wouldn't really help, because I noticed there's a really big cut on the knee and I could see the tendon. Luckily, it seems that the tendon is fine. I literally only pedaled 1K and it was really painful, so I haven't warmed up yet this morning, so I'll just have to wait and see it. I probably only slept about 2 hours last night, but I really want to make it to Madrid, especially as a as African. It's already quite an achievement in its own, and to have been able to also actively been involved in this race has been, from where I've came, has been, you know, a lot of steps taken. So I really want to make it to Madrid. The team's really supportive. They could have easily just said they're not going to allow me to start. So also the fact that I'm on a bit of antibiotics now is going to affect how I feel, but yeah, I don't know what to say. You know, no one feels sorry for you when you stop and go home. This is something you have to do for yourself. It's not about being tough. It's completely just something different, yeah.
How many stitches do you have?
10 underneath and 6 on top, so in total 16, yeah.
What happened? I mean, were you on the bottom of the crash, or were you, you know, how did you get such a bad injury?
Well, I was right of Luka Mezges, so someone took out the guy from EF. I couldn't see who it was, and then when Mezges went down, I went down on top of him.
Are you able to take painkillers as well?
Obviously, Tramadol is banned. Not that I use it, because it really actually raises your body temperature and makes you... It fucks up your stomach, to be quite honest. The only thing we can take nowadays is ibuprofen and paracetamol. But to be honest, yeah, when the adrenaline keeps pumping, you don't really feel it. It's when you're not riding that hard when you really feel it.
So your strategy, I mean, it's heavily strapped up. Your strategy now is to do a good warm-up, I guess, before the stage starts.
Yeah, it's not much time now, but we've got a long neutral zone and I'll see what happens.
Good luck.
So, thanks a lot.
So as I said, it's a really hard day today. Willie Smith is still in the race. He's not. There are a few guys being dropped already, but he's still battling on. So things looking not bad for him so far, because I think it was the first part of the stage that he was particularly worried about. But he's still there. What's going to happen in the race? I mean, Roglic, has Roglic got it sewn up, do you think? Do you think his performance on Los Mochucos suggested that he's going to cope okay with these steep little climbs?
I think yes and no. I kind of hope he doesn't. I really hope he doesn't just walk away with this as easily as he has been doing, just because it'll be a bit rubbish for the race. But the way he's been going, you can't see anyone else really challenging him. But we said that at the Giro, and what happened in the last week, he just felt a bit. Addy Ingles was just telling him about his breakfast in the car rather than what to do and all that kind of stuff. So I think there's still a long way to go, and I kind of hope he struggles a little bit just to make it a bit more of an exciting race for us to talk about and watch as well. But at the same time, he does look unbeatable at the minute, but I hope he's challenged right down to the line.
Yeah, he's shown no sign of weakness, really. And even when he's taken a tumble, even when he's lost teammates, he himself has looked pretty much unbeatable. And he's got a really strong team around him. And we know that success builds momentum within a team. But as Adam says, and this is my thing as well, he is untested at the winning when it comes to a three-week Grand Tour. And it's all in the third week. And the third week of the Vuelta isn't just the third week of the Vuelta. It's the last week of the last Grand Tour at the very end of the season. And all of that fatigue has to build mentally and physically. What was really interesting, we were chatting to Alberto Contador on the show earlier, and I just wanted to know about Stoffit. If he had any insight to Movistar, really, because we can be accused sometimes, I think, English-speaking media of overplaying the confusion within that team, and maybe that we're the ones who are confused and they're not confused inside the team. As far as he's concerned, they don't have a clue. He says that, maybe that's exaggerating it, but he said it is every man for himself, and he said it was the same at the Tour de France, and that's the instructions that they're given on occasion, that it is every man for yourself, apart from Marc Soler. But between Quintana and Valverde, he said they probably have not decided still who is that race leader. And you've got to think, I mean, okay, neither of them have been climbing like Roglic the last couple of days, but if they could get their shizzle together, you know, they've got two riders in the top four, and I kind of feel like they're still perfectly poised if Roglic does fall away, and if he doesn't keep it going for the last week, then any one of those two, you know, could then build towards the top step of the podium in the last week. But within that team, it's just fascinating, isn't it? But he doesn't think that Quintana leaving will have any impact on the strategy in this race.
It does look like Roglic is a little bit fresher than he was at the Giro. I think he went into that race quite over-raced, perhaps, and he's not raced since then. So he's probably a bit fresher. He's also got a much stronger team, I think, here.
I definitely think he's got a stronger team here, and hopefully he's learned from the Giro, but he's got to do the hard work, and the hard work. He's still got to finish the job off, really. And we saw with Lopez the other day, your team can work as hard as they want for you, but if you still haven't got the legs, you haven't got the legs. So, as we've said, there's a lot to go in this race, and there's a lot to play for, and there's a lot can go wrong for it. He might have a puncture at God knows when and not have a wheel on these steep climbs. You just don't know what might happen. We saw a few years ago with Froome, I know that was a crowd incident, but these things can happen, and that can lose you a race. So we don't know what can happen, and I hope something does happen, not bad like that, but I hope someone does take a bit of time back. But back to Movistar, I think they just go for team prizes every year. If you look at the Tour de France, the past 120 years, however long the race has been on, they've always won team prize because they have not one leader. They just go into it and you've got like four of them in the top 20, another, like the whole team in the top 30, but they don't win, ever.
It's a genuine question. What is the point of a team prize? What is the point?
It's just nice response. Didn't get to wear a yellow helmet in the Tour. That's it, really. I don't know. I just think a team prize, it's kind of like, well done, guys, you're all going really well, but you've not nailed one particular thing which you've come here to do, and that's win. If you look at...
Yeah, it's also... The team prize is flawed as a concept, because the whole point of a cycling team is to support a leader.
Yeah.
So it's not... They're not actually riding as a team in the sense that they want to place as many riders as possible at the top. That's actually the very definition. You know, if in a bunch sprint you have riders finish second and third, that's a failure.
Yeah, exactly.
If you have guys second and third on GC, that could be seen as a failure as well. Although I think ultimately in this race, I think we can agree that Roglic is the guy with the best legs at the moment. So it doesn't almost matter, I think, that Movistar don't have a clearly defined leader. It's clear that Roglic is the guy with the best legs. I don't think he's in that position because Movistar don't have their shizzle together.
Yeah, lighter. Well, yeah, but I mean that more for the third week, really. If Roglic can't keep the pace up, and if he doesn't last the distance, that Movistar will need to get their shizzle together if they want to take that top spot and replace him if he falls away. But that's just a sort of, I think, creating suspense where it doesn't yet exist. But as Adam said, it's a three-week race. Anything can happen.
Before I let you go and put all your smart clothes on and get all your makeup on for the telly, both of you. How about your team, Adam? Lotto Soudal, they've been very visible. They've been getting a lot of breaks. A young guy yesterday, Harm van Hook, spoke to him at the finish. He was best friends with Bjørg Lambrecht, and in fact replaced him in the race.
Lost a rider today.
Oh, I didn't know
lost
that.
Lost a rider today, Van Houten.
Brian.
Yeah.
But that was impressive for a young guy riding his first ever Grand Tour and called up at such late notice. And then Carl Fredrik Hagen, the young Norwegian who's still up there. I mean, we don't maybe expect him to be still in the top 10 in the week, but what can you tell us about him? Do you know him well?
I don't know him that well, but I think he's not that young. He's 29 or 20,
27, I think. But
27 or 28. So I think when he joined the team, I found out how old he was, and I was like, oh, you are a lot older than the young guys on the team. You're not really a young guy anymore. So, but he's doing amazing. I think the nice thing is with the team is they're just letting him get on with it, but they're also letting the other guys say, right, guys, you can go for stages, which we talked about Ineos earlier, and I was chatting about Teo, and we always see Ineos in every Grand Tour, they've got one goal, GC. And when things happen like this, where they don't really have a GC ride, they're almost lost. And I think you take out guys like Stannard and Dorg, so those guys aren't going to be able to cope with the mountains. But guys like Teo is a superb, superb rider. But no one's saying to him, Teo, you've got a hard day today. Back off, because you've got another hard day tomorrow. These guys are going to go super deep today. Save your legs. Go for tomorrow for the stage win. And instead, he's just going, oh, I'll see how it goes today. Go in deep still, but then the next day, trying again. And it's just like, Teo, concentrate on one stage.
So he's riding like a GC rider without having a high position on GC.
He's like an hour down. Just pick one stage. It doesn't matter if he loses two more hours. If he wins one stage, that will change his whole career. Add another couple of zeros on his contract, maybe. It's just, I think... I understand why the team is saying keep doing it, because he needs to keep progressing and trying hard, because he's obviously want to do this GC role. But where he is now, take one day off, go in the Gruppetto with Doolan and Stannard, because for him climbing it's an easy day. Tomorrow, full gas in the brake, go for it, you'll have fresher legs and he might come out with a stage win. But if he just keeps getting 15th or 16th on a thing, no one remembers it, no one cares really, do they?
You're hostage to fortune here, because he's in the brake today, isn't he? If he wins the stage, Adam,
that's the thing. If he wins today, great. And then, everything I've just said is out the window.
Right. Well.
He also often listens to the podcast, so he'll be messaging you later, probably telling you off and telling you exactly what his game plan is.
Well, I'll repeat, Teo is a great guy and a superb rider. No, but
he will listen to this. Adam, I know you've got about an hour of makeup, so I better let you go.
Thanks. What?
He's already got loads on, can't you tell? He only needs a little time.
I know, another hour.
God almighty.
Actually, he got some really nice, like, lip stuff on earlier that Belle, our makeup artist, decided to try out. And it's like this lip. It's like a lip plumper, so it makes your lips that little bit plumper. And Adam really quite liked it. He was like, quite tingly, that, isn't it?
what accent is Adam? Ooh, quite tingly, that, isn't it? No, I don't do that all. It's ridiculous. See what I have to work with?
Well,
I've only been here 3 days.
If any of you watch Eurosport as well as listening to the podcast, a small number, watch out for Adam's lovely, luscious lips coverage.
No. Thank you.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. You can get 25% off all your Science and Sport products, of course, at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. That's SISCP25. And in fact, one of our listeners, Gareth Enticott, today posted on the Cycling Podcast discussion group on Facebook that he wants to congratulate Science and Sport for producing the best tasting gel ever. Rhubarb and custard is the gel that he's posted there, a picture of that. So obviously a big fan of the rhubarb and custard gel. Just one of many available from Science and Sport, and a big thanks to them for supporting the podcast. As we watch, we heard in the last part from Adam Blythe and Orla Shinawee, always nice to hear from them. And as we watch the stage now, Sepp Kuss is racing ahead, and Alejandro Valverde has attacked behind, which obviously got a big cheer from the crowd up here.
Igualmente Soler sobre el corredor cabeza de carrera, 2 minutos 25 segundos, repito, 2 minutos 25 segundos.
2 minutes 25 seconds, they gap between Kuss and Valverde, Roglic, Soler.
Igualmente siempre retraso de López sobre Roglic y Valverde, 34 segundos, repito, 34 segundos.
34 seconds, they gap between Roglic, Valverde and López Pogacar.
Well, Sepp Kuss, the winner of the stage, big smile on his face as he came up to the line, and he was high-fiving spectators on the very narrow finish. Behind him, Ruben Guerrero of Katusha Alpecin and Theo Gegenhardt chased for a while but couldn't really close or reduce the gap. And behind them, Primoz Roglic, as you heard on the radio clips there, joined up with Valverde, distanced López and Pogacar, and behind them was Nairo Quintana, who got dropped from that group. So Valverde is, well, Adam and Orla were talking earlier about Movistar's strategy. It must be all for Valverde now. Soler, when he dropped back from that group, certainly gave him a bit of assistance, as you'd expect. And there'll be some changes to GC tonight, but a measure of Jumbo-Visma's strength that they can send one of their mountain domestiques up the road to win the stage.
No, de un tramo, de un tramo. ¡Ey! ¡Qué máquina! Adelante también para ti. Felicidades a nuestro campeón, Sepp Kuss, ganador de la etapa en la cerveza 0-0.
Okay, what happened there was that Sepp Kuss was given a bottle of beer on the podium, and I think they were expecting him just to take a sip, but he downed it and won. Which is interesting, and that actually went down pretty well with the crowd. I bet Primoz Roglic doesn't down his.
Well, we're back down the mountain now, and before I sit down with Daniel Freeb for a beer, let's hear from our audio diarists, Nick Schultz of Mitchelton Scott and James Knox of De Koenig Quickstep. Let's hear first from Nick, then from James.
Stage 15, what a stage. A very, very mountainous stage and ballistic from the gun. First climb was absolutely full gas. The peloton was in pieces. Loads of different riders trying to get up the road, good riders. Just made for a super, super hard start. I myself was a little bit dagged along with, 80% of the peloton. Things all came back together, and then it was business as usual for Jumbo-Visma, riding a solid tempo. Even though they had Sepp up the road, who ended up winning the stage. Great win for Sepp. He's a really, really great guy. So super happy to see him win, and also really nice to see Teo there in third. Another great guy, and deserving of that result. But I guess in terms of the stage, after that ballistic start, it was pretty controlled. And funnily enough, having a few discussions on the bus after the stage, we'd probably all take being on the absolute rivet at the start if it meant those few climbs in the middle being controlled like they were. Unfortunately, I don't think we'll be privileged to the same thing tomorrow, but we shall see. Esteban today was hurting a little bit after another hard crash yesterday, but he's just incredible the way he keeps chipping away, and we'll keep going forward with him, and we'll just we'll be looking to try and infiltrate a breakaway, I guess, and try and find some better luck and some success within the team, and our morale is still very high, and we're all rallying together and looking to try and turn things in our favour. But tomorrow will be one of the harder days of the race for sure.
Hello and welcome to Audio Diary Stage 15. On the bus now, driving back to the hotel. Same one as last night, and it's actually a 5-star hotel, so we've been spoiled rotten for a couple of nights, and it's a big treat. Arrived last night and there was a framed picture of me on the bedside table, which was something I've never seen before, and I reckon I might take that home and give it to my gran for Christmas, because I'm not too organised and she'll probably love it, so there's something for everyone. Stage today, hard day, pretty tired right now. Tried hard again to get in the break. Jumped in two or three things at the start, but wasn't to be, and then five guys slipped away, and then Movistar weren't having any of it, and they just rode a big tempo into the first climb. Started the first climb right on the limit. I was holding on, and then Soler attacked over the top and took a few guys, and only when I was just catching my breath and the guys were chasing so far behind it, I think Izaguirre hit it over the top, tried again to keep on jumping on stuff, came off the descent, still more attacks, still trying to follow stuff, but in the end it wasn't to be. It's not that easy, and also just didn't quite go with the right one, so a bit disappointed, but took to win the wheels all day, took care of myself, the boys helped me out, saved my energy for the last climb, they put me in a nice position for the bottom. It was an awful climb, really hard from the bottom, steep. Had it in my mind that Hugh Carthy won a Vuelta a Asturias stage here 2-3 years ago, so I thought it couldn't be that bad if he's one up there, but no, it was a hard climb. I just sort of made it up the first two or three. Well, I watched Valverde launch a massive attack and then Roglic go with it, and then tried to do my best just to follow the pace set by Fuglsang for Lopez, but he went really deep, split the group up a bit, and then sort of dangling off that what would have been sort of like third group, just fighting just to try and come back, and then it felt like every time I came back they accelerated a bit more. Quintana throwing a couple of attacks off the back, I'm not sure why, sort of should have just been trying to ride tempo, but never mind, I guess he was just getting frustrated with guys sat on his wheel, but it's the way it goes. And then kept battling to the line, and in the end I think I finished 21st on the stage, one place up in GC. A couple of guys got leapfrogged by Guerrero and came past Bennett and Chavez, I think, if that's right. So 17th on GC now, still really good, obviously still hoping to try and get in the break. We've got another really really hard day tomorrow. It's hard thinking about it right now after a brutal day on the bike, but getting the right frame of mind tomorrow and try and crack on. So yeah other than that, finished the stage and had gotten the, what do they call it, the breakaway with Adam Blythe, Orler and Brian Smith. Just sort of gets organised after the stage, just the team press officer, that's the word I'm looking for, the team press officer had just sort of asked if I wouldn't mind going on, and I had time to catch my breath and have a little wander over, and sort of a bit of a new experience for me, but made to feel dead comfortable, easy questions, easy talking, so nothing too difficult, and just a bit of a reflection on the day and how I'm going, so hopefully people caught that on the TV. Hopefully I came across okay. It's a bit of a, it's one of those things, we don't really get any real press training or anything, so more than often than not, it's just sort of, I'd like to think it's just the riders naturally coming across who they are, can be hard sometimes when you put on the spot with questions and you don't want to sound like a robot, but at the same time, it's difficult to come across personality-wise when you've just finished a stage and you're already cooked, so I'll ask my mum and dad and see what they say, see what they make of it. Also going on now is a Tour of Britain, been asked about that. Had a quick check of the results, the Kelso stage today, I did it in 2017. I don't know if it was a similar stage, I think we did Edinburgh to Kelso that year. got family not too far away, auntie in Hexham, and also my grandfather passed away a few years ago. He's from Newcastle, and we've still got different family there, so it's not too far away from area, but I spent a bit of time. Looks like a good course this year. The year I did it was mainly flat, and I was a bit cooked from Lavernier, but, you know, to be honest, I'm happy to be at the Vuelta more than the Tour of Britain in terms of racing that suits me.
I'm with Daniel Freeb. What was that you just said about the beer there, Daniel?
I said it was nice.
I thought I expected something a bit more sophisticated.
Well, I was about to segue into a much more florid description.
Any lingering notes?
No, but what it is, it's an artisan Asturian beer. It's supposed to be a red beer, but actually it's quite light. I'm very fussy. This is going to surprise you, Rich, but I'm very fussy about the colour of drinks generally. And we've discussed this, haven't we, before?
You're just fussy.
I have to have it in a glass, and it has to be the right kind of glass as well, so I can admire the robe. Anyway.
Well, it's not very red, that, is it? Let's face it. If you asked for red beer and that's what you got, I'd be turning it back. Anyway. We're in your very nice hotel, Daniel. This is
a hotel. Youth hostel.
It is a youth hostel.
Posh, very posh youth hostel.
It's like a sort of youth hostel you'd find in Chelsea. It's very nice. I've got a... It's very much a cut above where I'm sitting, I can tell you. We're back down the mountain now, and I can tell you, Sepp Kuss obviously was the winner of the stage. Ruben Guerrero was second. Theo Gegenhardt was third. You spoke to him, Daniel, I didn't manage to speak to him. Oscar Rodriguez was fourth. It was Oscar Rodriguez who won a stage last year, wasn't it?
Camperona.
Perona, yeah. That was a big surprise then. So mainly guys from the breakaway, but the first of the GC riders in was Primož Roglič in 8th with Valverde 9th in the same time. So they were the two big winners on GC today. Roglič still first overall, Valverde at 2.25 in 2nd. Tadej Pogacar limited his losses. He's 3rd at 3.42. Lopez 4th at 3.59. Quintana, the big loser, down to 5th at, staying in 5th, but now at 5 minutes and 9 seconds.
Can I make an earth-shattering revelation about Pog? Mm-hmm. This evening, Pog is reading at the Vuelta The Godfather by Mario Ruzo. Yeah, that's what he's been reading.
Really?
Yeah. Although I asked him about it tonight, and I didn't get a particularly florid or expansive response, as you would expect from Pog. But he did confirm. He said he hadn't had much time over the last few days, but that's what he's reading. I was tempted to it, but and then he made some comment about only having time to sleep, and I resisted the temptation to make some joke about, you know, who is Superman going to be sleeping with the fishes by the end of this Vuelta, Pog?
Well, I mean, that's quite ambitious. He goes ever up in my estimation, Pog. Very impressive indeed.
He looked tired today.
He did a little bit. It wasn't quite as energetic a performance as the other day, but I'm really... A strong ride from Sepp Kuss, wasn't it? And if we think back a year, and he's riding his first Vuelta, and he came in with a lot of expectation around him, I think, after his success at Tour of Utah. And I think he struggled a little bit, didn't he?
Sorry, it's Mario Puzo, who wrote the Godfather.
Sepp Kuss.
Struggling.
Last year. This year, he won the stage today, I don't know if you noticed.
Cycling, yes. I mean, he's been a revelation, hasn't he? He was good... He was already quite good at the Giro, although I don't think he was terribly pleased with his performance at the Giro. And he's just been outstanding here. And it's very easy to get sniffy when a young climber in particular performs extremely well in North American races, as he did a couple of years ago. You know, people sort of expect them to come to Europe and take it by storm. But we've seen many come and fall by the wayside before, haven't we? And, you know, you did wonder that about Sepp Kuss. But I think there's real substance to him, isn't there? And, I was struck really by how good and sprightly and fresh he looked on that climb. I mean, as you mentioned earlier, Rich, I spoke to Theo Gegenhardt, who was very disappointed not to have caught Sepp Kuss, but he sort of thought the writing was pretty much on the wall when Sepp Kuss had opened up a gap at the bottom of the final climb.
Well, I managed to speak to his teammate Nielsen Paulus at the finish. Here, younger rider and really a year behind Sepp Kuss in his development in a lot of ways, although he's younger still, and he's been riding extremely well as well, and part of that Jumbo-Visma team.
Yeah, we're Oh my God, yeah, this race just keeps getting better for us, I guess, you know? I mean, we all knew that when Seb really lit it up on the first, or I guess second kind of GC day when, I don't know, that was like stage 3 or 4 or something, he was chasing down Valverde in the top 5 climbers. We knew that he was climbing really well here, so that was really incredible that he could have the freedom to go for the stage win today. And in the beginning, it was more with an eye to help Primoz later on in the stage if the race got a little too hard for us in the back. But in the end, it was very controllable for us all day, and beautiful victory for Sepp, and Primoz extends his lead, so couldn't have gone any better for us. I mean, I think the attitude of the team definitely has a huge role to play. I think everybody's in such a great mood because Primoz is doing so well, and I think everybody on the team is feeling really strong as well. And yeah, the atmosphere on the team is amazing, and that only helps us in the race.
Well, did you know what was happening up the road? Were you able to sort of follow his progress?
Yeah, we could. We could hear our directors in the radio the entire time, and I think it was simultaneously as Sepp was extending his lead, Primoz was attacking and putting time into the other GC riders. And I mean, that's such a rarity to hear in a Grand Tour in cycling, to have your team leader extending his lead in the overall and having another teammate winning the stage. It's pretty magical.
This is your first Grand Tour. You must think they're easy now, do you?
I wouldn't say it's easy. It's very enjoyable though. It's a great experience so far. It's not as much as I played it up to be in my head. I was expecting something really treacherous, and I guess it can be. But so far this year, it's been really incredible, and yeah, I don't even know what to think. Really, it's really.
I was being flippant, obviously. I mean, a year ago, Sepp was riding his first Grand Tour, and maybe struggling to adjust a little bit. Do you look at the progress he's made and how well he's been riding here, and you know, think that you might be on a similar path?
Oh, I hope so. Yeah, I mean, it's really inspiring to see Sepp winning a stage in the last week of a Grand Tour. That just shows depth and strength, and yeah, I'm hoping that I can follow a similar path, and yeah, maybe in the future go for some wins myself. But right now, I mean, if an opportunity presents itself, that's nice, but our focus is really only with Primoz here. Hey, man.
That was Nielsen Paulus, Jumbo Visma, and various, I mean, a team that is defending and even, you know, strengthening its hold on the red jersey, the leader's jersey, to also be able to send a rider up the road to win the stage. It's not often that you really see that.
Have you spoken to Nielsen Paulus about his shopping?
No.
His food shopping in particular. You know, do you know this about the Jumbo Visma have this app, the Food Coach? And
well, it's tied in with Jumbo, isn't it, the supermarket?
It is. It basically will calculate based on a rider's energy expenditure in a given day, training session or race, and what they need to eat, how much of it they need to eat. And another feature it has is that, particularly for the riders who live in the Benelux countries who have access to branches of Jumbo supermarkets, I think it will suggest a shopping list. And they can have whatever food they need delivered to their door. I spoke to Nielsen Paulus about this yesterday, and what was very interesting was him talking about how the goal of the sort of nutritional team at Jumbo-Visma is that none of the riders put on or really lose any weight in a Grand Tour. His weight has managed to stay very stable, and he thought that was a key reason why he was still feeling pretty good up until yesterday, at least.
Can we get this app for Lionel for Grand Tours? What about GC then, Daniel? I mean, nothing really too unexpected today. We've seen this from Quintana a lot recently, where, you know, I think the attack that Valverde made was very strong, and Roglic went with him. But do we assume now that Movistar might get fully behind Valverde if they weren't already?
I think they're pretty much behind him already, weren't they? Quintana at the finish, he sort of has this slightly kind of mystical air when he speaks sometimes, you know, which sort of infuses with great profoundness words that are actually quite banal when you sort of take them apart. But he said at the finish, he talked about the tiredness, fatigue. When fatigue arrives, he said, there's nothing you can do. You just have to take your foot off the gas, take your foot off the pedals and recover. But again, said with this very with this very kind of solemn air, which made everyone sort of stand back and stroke their chin, and you know, as though they were listening to some great kind of shamanic, you know, messiah.
That is Quintana, isn't it?
It is. But it's true, isn't it? And you know, it struck me actually watching Pogacar today as well. I said he looked, you know, a little bit tired. And we've talked before about how, you know, reversing momentum on Grand Tours is a bit like turning an oil tanker, isn't it? You know, when the tiredness begins to seep in, it's quite difficult to reverse that. Quintana is obviously, as much as, you know, we will all crowd around him at the finish and say, Nairo, you know, can you turn this around? I mean, he knows himself that he hasn't got it in his legs today, and which means he's probably not going to have it in his legs tomorrow either. And, you know, that applies to a few guys. I think Superman is probably in a similar position, as much as, you know, his team are supporting very well, riding aggressively, less aggressive today, but still pretty aggressive. And he just hasn't got the punch he needs in his legs to go with the best guys.
These guys are going backwards while Valverde and Roglic are going forwards, it looks. I mean, Valverde, we don't probably talk about him enough, but he's 39 and looks as good as ever. He traditionally kind of fades in the final week, but who knows, you know? I mean, he's still pretty well placed if Roglic does falter.
Yeah, I still think that if Roglic doesn't win this Vuelta, the most likely rider to win is Pog. Valverde's record in the last week is not great. And it's going to be interesting to see tomorrow on a climb, a 17-kilometre climb, La Cubilla, about an hour of climbing. That sometimes changes things. There's a different type of climber might come to the fore tomorrow, and Valverde might struggle a little bit more, but he looks fresh. He certainly did today.
I almost forgot, Daniel, we heard from Willie Smith earlier on, the Katusha Alpecin rider from South Africa, who started the stage with that terrible wound on his knee. I waited for him at the finish. I had to wait 27 minutes and 59 seconds after Circus, but he did finish, and he was certainly not last. He was 143rd, came in a little group, which was a good couple of minutes before the very last remnants of the gruppetto.
Before you introduce him, Rich, very briefly, because this could be a meandering debate that could take about an hour. Where do you stand on... So people were commenting on the picture you posted of the wound in his knee, and this topic of duty of care comes up, and people suggesting that he shouldn't be riding. I'm quite hard line on this. I kind of think that it's entirely down to the individual, really, and I think that we laud and celebrate and venerate these riders for the extremes that they'll go to, and I think it's kind of all part of that, of defying pain and, you know, as I say, things that we sort of celebrate.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if it's a concussion or something, it's a different matter, and you would assume and imagine that the doctors on the team would tell him if his health was at risk, but ultimately, it's his decision. He's an adult, and to whether he carries on or not. He got through the stage okay, so he's still in the race, and tomorrow's another hard day. But I did manage to catch a quick word with him at the finish.
Looking out for you here, you've made it to the finish, which I know you weren't, you know, fully confident you could do. How was it?
I think we were just quite lucky. Movistar launched Marc Soler on the first climb, so if they actually started racing full gas from there on, it would have been much more difficult. But yeah, it was a hard stage, so now to get to the bus and the doctor to see what's up with the stitches and so on.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like walking is maybe even more painful than cycling, is it?
It got more painful towards the end, so I'll just have to see.
Okay, good luck tonight.
Thanks a lot.
Right, well, let's go and have dinner, Daniel, locally somewhere, and then I've got the drive back to my strange hotel. Before we go, a few thank yous to friends of the podcast. Thomas Ilenfelt, is that right? You're
Ilenfelt.
Jennifer Meller, Richard Pinch, Kenneth Rogers, Paul Bailey, and Jeremy Rooney.
Stephen Tunstall, Alexa Cartwright, Eric Nestas Mattison, Niels Madsen, Rebecca Gates, Rod McEwen, and Jeffrey Milligan.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Daniel.
Thank you.